So, these are our great Buddhists of the 20th century, or at least some of them. There are many more that could have been mentioned. Well, there was Dr. Suzuki, D.T. Suzuki, whom I did mention in passing. There was the great Chinese abbot, Tai Zhu. There was Dr. G.P. Malarasekara of Sri Lanka. There was Bhikkhu Buddhadasa of Thailand. And there was the great 120-year-old Chinese Chan meditation master, the Venerable Xu Yun. I could have spoken about them, but obviously there wasn't time. And even with regard to my five great Buddhists of the 20th century, I've been able to give only a brief glimpse of them and of their greatness. Fortunately, biographies of all five are available. For Dharmapala, there's my own biographical sketch, Flame in Darkness, written in 1952. For Alexandra David Neil, we have Ruth Middleton's biography with the subtitle Portrait of an Adventurer, which she indeed was. For Ambedkar, we have Dhananjaya Kir's Dr. Ambedkar, Life and Mission. For Lama Govinda, there is Ken Winkler's little book, A Thousand Journeys, as well as Lama Govinda's own The Way of the White Clouds. And finally, for Dr. Konza, we have his own Memoirs of a Modern Gnostic. He calls himself a modern Gnostic because, well, he regarded himself as an elitist, and of course he believed that the Gnostics were elitists, so he identified in that sort of way. And I must say, it's very good to read the biographies of great Buddhists. Such biographies can be very inspiring. They enable us to see Buddhism being actually lived. Purely doctrinal studies, good and necessary though they may be, sometimes may give us the impression that Buddhism is rather remote from life, and biographies help to redress this balance. After all, Buddhism began with lives. It didn't begin with books. Buddhism began with the lives of the Buddha and his enlightened disciples. So I hope that you've been inspired by the glimpse I've been able to give this afternoon of the lives of our five great Buddhists of the 20th century. I must say, I enjoyed preparing this lecture. I enjoyed reacquainting myself with these five great Buddhists. And I've also enjoyed giving this lecture. While preparing it, I noticed two things. I noticed, first of all, that the five were all very different. Probably you've noticed it too. They had very different characters. They grew up in very different circumstances. In many ways, they did very different things. But they were all great Buddhists. We can appreciate them all. We can rejoice in the merits of them all. And this is very important. It reminds us that though we are Buddhists, though we all go for refuge, we don't all have to be the same. We don't all have to live in the same way. We don't have to do the same things, because what unites us is more important than what divides us. What unites us is the fact that we are all Buddhists, that we all go for refuge. The second thing I noticed was that there were certain qualities which, despite their differences, all five seemed to possess in common. First of all, single-mindedness. They were all very single-minded. Dharmapala wanted to restore Buddhagaya temple and revive Buddhism in India. David Neil wanted to travel and study in the Buddhist East. Ambedkar, in the same way, was devoted throughout his life to the uplift of his people. Govinda's life was devoted to study, meditation and the arts, including writing. Konza spent The best part of it is like translating Prajnaparamita Sutras. So once they had discovered their purpose in life, they never wavered. And then they were all characterized by fearlessness. This quality is perceptible in varying degrees in all their lives. David Neil faced the terrors of deserts and mountains. Ambedkar braved the hostility of the whole of Orthodox Hindu India, and so on. And then there was their unconventionality. They were all unconventional people. Dharmapala lived as an anagarika, not as a bhikkhu, not as a layman. David Neil lived apart from her husband, though remaining on friendly terms. That was astonishing at that time. And then there was autonomy. They were all autonomous individuals. All five were self-motivated. They did their own thing. They went their own way, sometimes in the face of tremendous opposition. They were all, therefore, true individuals. They were all heroes in the best sense of the term. Nowadays, of course, towards the end of the 20th century, hero worship, especially Carlylean hero worship, is not in fashion, except perhaps in a very perverted and degenerate form. But we do need heroes in the true positive sense. We need people to whom we can look up, people on whom we can model ourselves, from whom we can derive inspiration. I was very sad to hear on the radio a few days ago that in Britain, mention of heroes like Nelson and Florence Nightingale have been wiped out from some of the school history books. The little ones are just going to be given facts and figures, and of course pocket calculators. Not heroes, not heroines. I consider this a very unfortunate development. So we should not allow ourselves as Buddhists to be influenced by this current fashionable trend. We should continue to cherish our heroes and our heroines. We should admire them. We should celebrate their memory. We should rejoice in their merits. We should realize that our great Buddhists, whether of the 20th or any other century, are among our greatest and most precious possessions.